From Redeemer Broadcasting, this is Holding All Things Together for this first weekend in September. I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter. America does not have enough cattle right now. In 2019, we had about 94.7 million head of cattle. But now, that number is down to 82.6 million cattle and calves in the beginning of this year, according to the USDA. So, we are facing a lack of adequate American beef to feed our nation. This substantially drives up the price of our beef. Our largest source of cattle outside of the United States is Mexico. But the problem is that Mexican cartels have captured a major portion of the cattle supply chain within Mexico. The cartels have embedded themselves and completely control the socioeconomic areas that they are in, thus affecting governance, territories, and of course, the cattle. It's important to understand that food security is national security. The cost of ground beef averaged $6.89 per pound in July, while steak reached a record of $13.06 per pound. Our guest today discusses the situation and shares his opinion on how to fight the problem. We are joined by former U.S. Border Patrol agent and now senior fellow at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, Ammon Blair.
And since our largest partner is Mexico, we need to deeply look into that system itself. And when you do, you realize that the Mexican cartels have captured a major portion of the cattle supply chain within Mexico. You can start it from they roughly smuggle in about 800,000 head of cattle into Mexico yearly. So just to think about that 800,000 head of cattle smuggled from the Western Hemisphere. And a lot of those narco ranches are in Honduras, Nicaragua, and Guatemala. But also, it's not just the smuggled illicit cattle that are being given fake ear tags to show that they're Mexican cattle, fake veterinary documents, but also in the interior, specifically Cartel Jalisco New Generation has actually captured the interior portion or the actual domestic cattle supply, namely in Jalisco.
Also ahead, Pastor Bill Shisko reminds us that we are to labor 6 days. Later in the program, writer Jerry Wiss joins us to look at the origin and meaning of Labor Day. He considers labor relations, unions, and what the scriptures have to say about the ethics involved in working as a Christian to the glory of God. This applies to both workers and bosses. Finally, we'll take another look at this week in history. All this just ahead on Holding All Things Together.
Well, it's Labor Day weekend. On Monday, we take a day off to celebrate work. And so I think the best thing for us to do today is, in going through the form of sound doctrine, go back to the fourth commandment, which is on keeping the Sabbath day holy. But it begins with labor 6 days. And I want to impress upon you on this Labor Day weekend that work is a blessing, not a curse. Work did not come in after the fall. Adam and Eve were to cultivate the garden. That's work in Eden. Now under the fall, there's sweat and there's thorns, but work is still a blessing. Why? Well, number one, work is a way to provide for our own needs and for the needs of others. We are called to work with our own hands, doing what is good. We're called to owe no man anything except to love one another. And we work that we might be able to give to others who are in need. And so we do need to beware of selfishness. Gain is a blessing, but selfishness is a sin. But work is the way to provide for our own needs and the needs of others. It's also the way to use biblical language, subdue the earth for our God. That's a wonderful topic. In the medical world, It is subduing illnesses and things that are used for antibiotics and equipment so that there are benefits to our health that come. Natural resources. We're to be good stewards of the earth, to be sure, but we steward the earth and we get the natural resources that we use for our good, and not just our good, but for the good of others. And in the third place, well, quite frankly, work is a way to keep us and others out of trouble. I think one of the scariest verses in the Old Testament is 2 Samuel 11 and verse 1. At the time when the kings went out to war, David didn't. He stayed home and he got in big trouble with Bathsheba. Well, let's value work as, among other things, a way to keep us out of trouble. Now, in a plain answer, you can go back and hear one of the programs on warnings against socialism. But for now, let's celebrate Labor Day by, on Monday, not working, and then on Tuesday, in the name of God, getting back to work.
On the Zoom line with us today is Ammon Blair. And Ammon, I think we talked once before, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you, sir, for having me.
You used to work for immigration, and now you're with the Texas. Maybe you could tell us what your role is there.
Sure. So, yes, I used to be a Border Patrol agent at the southern border, and then I also served a little over 22 years in the military. Now I work at the Texas Public Policy Foundation as a senior fellow. So I conduct the research and analysis and try to link up what's actually happening, boots on ground versus what needs to happen in the halls of whether that's our state capitol or Congress. So I try to match, reality with policy. And so that's kind of what I do at TPPF.
That's huge. I have almost no patience for people that deal exclusively in theory and they don't have boots on the ground because they don't know what they're doing. So tell us, what's going on here with this beef trade, cattle trade, and the illegalities that are happening?
Sure. So there are really two separate issues that have collided. First, America simply does not have enough cattle right now. You know, the USDA counted about 86.2 million cattle and calves at the beginning of 2026, compared to with about 94.7 million in 2019. So we've lost roughly about 8.5 million head in 7 years. And now the national herd is near levels we haven't seen since the early 1950s.
Wow.
So consumers are seeing the consequences of not just that, but the concentration, both at the processing level, at the processors, as well as the retailers. So now in July, ground beef has averaged about 6.89 per pound, almost 57% more than July of 2021. And steak has averaged at a record of $13.06 per pound. Mm. So now naturally Washington is trying to find ways to increase that supply. And before the New World Screwworm, that would be with Mexico. We were roughly trading, they were exporting 1.1 million cattle annually on average to the United States. We actually had a trade deficit with Mexico because of the amount of concentration from our main meat packers looking for cheaper sources of beef to come in. Mm-hmm. So that's one issue, is now that our economy, now that our appetite as consumers for beef and the lack of American beef to feed this nation, we must outsource. And since our largest partner is Mexico, we need to deeply look into that system itself. And when you do, you realize that the Mexican cartels have captured a major portion of the cattle supply chain within Mexico. You can start it from, they roughly smuggle in about 800,000 head of cattle into Mexico yearly. So just to think about that, 800,000 head of cattle smuggled from the Western Hemisphere. And a lot of those narco ranches are in Honduras, Nicaragua, and Guatemala. But also, it's not just the smuggled illicit cattle that are being given fake ear tags to show that they're Mexican cattle, fake veterinary documents, but also in the interior, specifically Cartel Jalisco New Generation has actually captured the interior portion or the actual domestic cattle supply, namely in Jalisco, which roughly would export about 100,000 cattle into the United States a year. And so they've done so through extortion, co-option, coercion, and corruption through whether that's institutions, the unions there. And so when you really look at it, the cartels are actually, your audience needs to realize that the cartels are involved in more just than just human smuggling,
yes,
in narcotics. Mexico has the highest criminal enterprise marketplace in the world. They are number one. And then who leads that those enterprises? It's the cartels. The cartels are going to, just like what I always say is, like, if you remember the Italian mafia back in the day, in their heyday, imagine the Italian mafia at the size where you could be in 100 countries. You could have your own army.
Oh, my.
Really, really, that's what the cartel is. They embed themselves in and completely control socioeconomically the areas that they're in, governance, territory, you name it. And that's why we deem them as a hybrid threat.
Yes.
They, as opposed to just drug trafficking organizations or whatnot. And so really, when you look at your meat or avocados or anything agriculture that are bringing in, everything that we're consuming, a lot of portions of that supply chain coming from Mexico is in some way or fashion controlled or extorted by the cartels.
I'll tell you, Ammon, it burns me up when I consider what's going on. You know, we first heard about the cartels regarding human smuggling, and that's awful. I mean, you can't get any worse than that. But, you know, affecting our food supply, this is bad too. Now, let me ask you, what can be done? What should be done?
Sure. Well, the federal government can no longer separate trade from for security. Right now, the government of Mexico yesterday claimed that they can trace back from the birth of the cow to a present state where they take them to export them into the United States. Mm-hmm. Through our research and through working with other organizations, that is not the case. And so we need to realize, one, that the cartels are heavily involved in this. The Department of War also needs to get involved in this and not so look so myopically focused on narcotics or to have a single eye focus on a commodity, but the actual organizations themselves.
Yeah.
And so when you start doing that, right now the DOW is currently in the Western Hemisphere, like in Guatemala and whatnot. If they were to go and start disrupting, dismantling, and defeating the networks of the smuggling network of cattle, as well as all the other enterprises and not just narcotics, we could be a lot further along and we could actually box them into Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing, is getting Department of War involved in the Department of State to understand that food security is national security. Two, at the very end of the article, I tell everyone, go and shake hands with the people that feed you. We need to go back to the days pre-COVID, where we actually shook hands with those. And maybe back in the days of the early 80s or 90s, where you go and not just a farmer's market, but you actually get your food from your farm.
Yes.
And go and find out where your meat is actually coming from. Right now, due to country of origin labeling laws, you may not even know where your steak is coming from. If you go to Texas Roadhouse or if you're going to any other steakhouse, you have no clue where that's coming from. And
yeah.
So you may not even realize that you're buying Mexican beef and then also supporting a foreign terrorist organization.
Yes. That is such a big deal. Today we're talking with Ammon Blair. And Ammon, anything else you want to mention regarding the cattle problem and the cartels before I have one more question for you?
Just that a realization for the American people that when we try to trade with another nation, we must look at their systems in place and also look at why we are in need of our imports in the first place. The amount of regulation and concentration in our own farming and agricultural industry has made it so that we need imports, quote unquote need, I say, whether that's importing beef or importing cheap labor. It's the same concept. As we consolidate in all of our farming and ranching in out-regulate our local ranchers and farmers, that family farm, and go to large multinational corporations, that's what's going to happen? Is they're going to need greater access to better or foreign commodities and, unfortunately, foreign workers.
Yes. This is a big deal, and I didn't realize how big it was until I started reading your article about it. It's found in The Federalist, and the title is Cartels Are Exploiting Mexico's Cattle Trade at Cost to U.S. Good title, good article. We've got 1 or 2 minutes left. There was another article, very hard-hitting, that you wrote. This is way back in February, where Mamdani, the mayor of New York City, is demanding U.S. immigration policy start obeying Islam. What is with this guy, this Mamdani? It's like a tooth out of joint. He doesn't really fit where he is here in New York City. Any comments?
Yeah, you know, when you look at that and you look at the Holy Land Foundation, that case here in Texas, those documents that were released from that case really showed the Muslim Brotherhood's goals, and that it was to bring in as many of their foreign nationals into the United States.
Yes.
So that way they could have transnational repression, or they could actually control the diasporas within our communities, and through that ways and means completely subvert your local or your state constitution, your local governance, governing systems, and then also ultimately the our constitution. And so when you look at that, and he was mentioning the exact same documents that the Muslim Brotherhood were pushing out, and the doctrine that they were pushing out,
yes,
for all those to come into the United States. And really that's what he was referencing. He was referencing that really mass migration, typically from his faith, is necessary in order to establish what the Muslim Brotherhood constitutes a civilization jihad.
Yes. People don't realize that this is nothing less than basically a conquering of a nation. And I tell you, we don't want it. And I once heard a pastor scolding his people that we were not open enough to the illegal aliens. And I'm thinking, wow, you are way off track, pal. Hey,
yeah.
If people want to learn more, Ammon Blair, how can they follow you?
Sure, you can follow me on X at Ammon S. Blair, or you can go to our website at texaspolicy.com, and you can follow all of our work there.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. May God bless you and keep you safe. Ammon, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Today, writer Jerry Wiss joins us to take a look at the origin and meaning of Labor Day. He considers labor relations, unions, and what the scriptures have to say about the ethics involved in working as a Christian to the glory of God. This applies to both workers and bosses. The historical landscape between labor and corporations in America is a checkered one, but we have gotten better on both sides. Maintaining good labor relations requires that both labor and corporations apply the second greatest commandment, namely, to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. Jerry is a frequent contributor to Holding All Things Together and is a writer for Christian Renewal magazine.
Monday will be Labor Day. We welcome it as a day off from school and work, but its commemoration reaches back into the 19th century, when the day was officially recognized throughout the U.S. in 1894. By that time, 30 states had already set aside the day for commemoration. Labor Day is more than a day off. It's meant to commemorate the value and contribution of American labor in building and maintaining the American business dynamism that all other nations, in one way or another, want to imitate. And yet labor, particularly unions, have a checkered history in the U.S., but then again, so do corporations. Labor unions in the past have been tied to organized crime, have limited workers' liberties by not permitting an exemption from union participation and dues, and once entrenched, seem to keep pushing the envelope on wages and benefits, even though American wages and benefits are unrivaled anywhere in the world. Looking back, we can say the reason many of us drive Asian-made cars is because U.S. auto labor unions have contributed to making American car manufacturers uncompetitive. The same can be said of other industries. On the other hand, although free market capitalism grants the people the most freedom, that freedom has been abused by America's corporations. There are accounts of 16-hour, 7-day work weeks. If a coal mine collapsed and miners died, their bodies would be brought on a gurney to the front steps of their home and left there for the family. No life insurance, no benefits. Corporations sniffing out the possible formation of a labor union would routinely hire thugs that attacked organized assemblies, beating and in some cases killing workers. So no one's hands are clean here. The historic antagonism between unions and corporations shows that we are sinners, whether envious and hate-filled or greedy and abusive. What's more, people make a living, and a pretty good one, keeping these fires stoked. Heads of unions are often in the business of stoking discontentment, envy, and slander, accusing employers of crimes and sins that often are not at all true. Corporates, on the other hand, have historically found it too easy to put profits over people. Workers over the years have seen their benefits cut, their wages stagnate, and their jobs disappear. We have made progress along this front of this traditional battlefield, and the current administration is trying to move the ball forward, encouraging non-U.S. businesses to open plants in the U.S. Moreover, corporates are now in a position of competing on benefits and wages as well to attract and keep people, even though inflation nips at the heels of both workers and businesses. At the same time, workers are beginning to enjoy employer recognition in terms of family and health. Government unions proliferate, but unions are evident in only 6% of American business today. There are now 27 right-to-work states where laws prohibit requiring employees to join a union or pay union dues as a condition of employment. In Ephesians 6 and Colossians 3, the apostle addresses bondsmen, slaves, who are Christians. Not that anyone would advocate slavery today, but the extraordinary thing is the expectation the apostle has for them, that they obey their masters, that they don't work one way in front of them and another way behind their backs, that they find their peace and liberty in Christ rather than only in their station in life. And for those in authority who are Christians, the apostle also has a word to stop being harsh, threatening, and abusive, to remember that even though in authority here, you are under God's authority, and so don't treat others the way you wouldn't want to be treated by God. This insight, a hallmark of the Christian faith, can be seen as the reason for any genuine peace and progress between workers and bosses. To not merely acknowledge, but seek to understand the other's point of view, whether that someone is above or below us, is an expression of Christian love, which, after all, is what the world needs more of.
Time once again for This Week in History. August 30th, 1862. It is not a good week for Union forces, as Confederate troops under Edmund Kirby Smith rout the Yankee Army under Generals Horatio Wright and Malin Manson, south of Richmond, Kentucky, removing, for the time being, the Union threat to the Shenandoah Valley. Over 4,300 Union forces are captured, including Manson and his entire staff. September 1st, 1939. At 4:45 a.m., Nazi Germany's invasion of Poland begins as 1.5 million German troops cross the 1,750-mile border as the Luftwaffe bombs Polish airfields and German warships and U-boats hit Polish naval forces in the Baltic. Meanwhile, under an agreement with the Soviet Union, Russian forces enter Poland from the east. By the 28th, Poland collapsed under the weight of the German Blitzkrieg. And September 2nd, 1973. Beloved author of The Lord of the Rings trilogy and The Hobbit, J.R.R. Tolkien, passes away in Bournemouth, England, at the age of 81. That was This Week in History, events as man recorded them, as God ordained them.
That's our program for this week. Thanks for joining us. Holding All Things Together is a production of Redeemer Broadcasting, and the views expressed are those of the participants. If you'd like to support us and help on production and distribution expenses, you may visit our website and give in a secure fashion online. We're found at RedeemerBroadcasting.org. For Holding All Things Together, I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter.
God willing, see you next week.